from Wall Street to the White House. This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, everybody. We're going to do some money in politics. We have Liz Peek, Fox News contributor and syndicated columnist. We have Steve Moore of Committee to Unleash Prosperity and WABC radio host. More Money, which follows this show on any of these same stations. So welcome, kids. Liz Peek, begin with you. Colombia. I want to talk about Colombia for a few moments. DEI leads to anti-Semitism, leads to Jewish hate crimes, leads to American hate crimes, too, for that matter. But Jewish hate crimes. The president of Colombia got grilled in Washington in front of Congress. She comes back, calls the police in to get rid of him. But guess what? They're back. And I don't see any changes. I don't see any elimination of DEI at Columbia or Harvard or Penn or any of these schools. And as Dershowitz has said so many times on the TV show, DEI is the sponsor of anti-Semitism, which, of course, is the Jewish hate crime. What do you make of this, Liz?
Well, I don't think there has been any progress in the real underlying problem, which is that these schools have embraced no diversity of opinion. They've allowed a very left-wing faculty orientation to kind of become embedded in their schools. And all these kids have been indoctrinated to believe that the world is divided into oppressors and the oppressed, that American kids are divided into the oppressors and the oppressed. And unfortunately, that now translates into anti-Semitism in really vile ways, Larry. I mean, we're not just seeing kids now oppose Israel's very aggressive tactics in Gaza. We're not seeing them just stand up for the Palestinian people. We are seeing kids embracing Hamas and Hezbollah and chanting pro-Hamas slogans. This makes my head explode. I don't know what they're thinking. Hamas is truly a hateful, violent terror organization that burns babies alive and impales pregnant women, and then cheers about it. I mean, these are people that these kids now look up to. I don't get it. And DEI is certainly part of it, but I think it's really kind of a long-running sore that now has boiled over. And I think the trustees of all these schools across America have got to come to grips with the fact that they have allowed this to happen and challenge this very aggressively.
That's where the power is, Liz. You nailed it. It's the corporate boards, the university's corporate boards, the trustees, whatever they call themselves, and they're not changing. I mean, they pick the presidents, but they make the policies. Yours, that is just exactly right. Now, Steve Moore, on the other hand, Joe Biden wants to reward these institutions of lower learning by canceling all the student loans, right? 500, yeah. Penn Wharton estimated $500 billion of student loan cancellations. How about those apples?
Yeah, and I was kind of laughing when Liz was talking about these kids who feel so oppressed on the campuses of Columbia and Harvard. Yeah. I mean, these are the most privileged, and I don't usually like to use that word, but they are privileged, and they're sitting there whining about all the events in the world. It goes, I think, even a little deeper than you and Liz were saying. I think this is just indoctrination in the schools that started in the kindergarten. Mm. I mean, it really does. All the climate change craziness, all the anti-Israel rhetoric. And this is one of the reasons, one of my big crusades is to have school choice where parents can get their kids out of these rotten public schools that aren't teaching math or writing or English or the basic skills they're going to need. But it is indoctrinating them with these crazy lunatic ideas. I mean, I actually blame the parents sometimes even more than the kids, because we're the one, as my son used to say when I blame his generation for things, he'd say, "Well, Dad, who do you think made us this way?"
Ouch.
Mm. Well, that's an interesting thought. I'm processing that thought right now.
Right.
I'm processing that thought.
Well, look, this was the 60s generation that turned into parents, right?
Yeah.
And now they're indoctrinating their kids. I saw something the other day. It really disturbed me. It is a little, this is not totally off topic, but, one of the biggest problems in the world is declining birth rates, and that's happening in the United States and everywhere. We need more children. And there was a piece in the New York Times about how a lot of kids aren't having babies because, you know, why? If you bring a baby into the world, they're just going to add to climate change and destroy the planet. And so there was a letter from a parent of a kid who was in the 20s in the New York Times saying, I'm so proud of my kids for not having children because they're helping save the planet. How demented is that?
That's just sad.
It's really demented.
But I have a case of DEI. NPR, National Public Radio. They have problems with diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? I mean, there's this guy blew the whistle, the newsroom, 87 Democrats, zero Republicans. The federal government has given him about $250 million a year. Where's the diversity, Liz? I mean, so now I'm in favor of DEI for NPR, but I don't see any diversity.
Well, again, this is a massive failure of oversight and administration. Claudia Tenney, who I know you like very much, and so do I, has introduced a bill basically saying stop funding NPR. And I think that's totally appropriate. Yeah, right. This isn't retribution. This we taxpayers are paying for a univoice. I mean, this is not impartial reporting. And as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, who does impartial reporting? And BBC used to. I don't think they do anymore. But this is absurd. This is propaganda, basically, being paid for, again, by taxpayers. And it's not appropriate. By the way, I remember writing about something came up with NPR, I don't know, 10 years ago, again, a political issue. And at the time, the writers, the reporters for NPR around the world kind of objected to an oversight document handed down by management saying that their views or their writing should be pro-American in this journal that was going across the globe. And they objected to that. They didn't want to have to be, writing things that were positive about the United States. I mean, how crazy is that? So this is naturally where we now land. That this is really leftist propaganda, and this woman who has been—I mean,
crazy.
Who did this? Who put this woman in charge of this organization?
Wait, she checks. She checks off every box. She checks off every box. She checks
one thing about
Davos. I mean, you go right down, and she's done it all on the left. Go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
So I was going to say that. So I know the gentleman who wrote this piece. Or I think his name's Uri Berliner, and I've known him for years, and he's not a conservative by any means. He's just a good reporter, good journalist, and he writes this piece, you know. And so, in other words, he's not some crazy, so-called right winger. He writes this piece, and instead of the NPR, I mean, the proper response to this is, oh my God, you know, here's a place that's talked about tolerance and diversity for 40 years, and it turns out they're the least tolerant and least diverse organization in America. So you would think, in normal circumstances, they would, you know, they'd say, oh my God, this is really troubling. We're going to do something about that. That's what normally would happen. Instead, they've suspended him for telling the truth.
Mm. Yeah.
So they're not backing down here. They're saying, how dare you, publicize the fact that we're such a left-wing organization. By the way, when I first came to Washington in 1984, I think you were in the Reagan administration back then, Larry, one of my first articles was, you know, about the 10 or 12 organizations that Reagan should get rid of, and Corporation for Public Broadcasting was one of them, and here we are 40 years later.
Yeah, but, you know, I got to tell you, I got my start in TV with the McNeil Lehrer show.
And that,
which was, at first it was a half hour, and they made it into an hour. These were two old pros,
right.
Even-handed.
Right.
The Jimmy Carter economy was imploding in the late 70s, and they were the first people to have economists on the show to talk about it. It was the first time you'd ever seen an economist on a TV show, except, you know, maybe a Fed chairman on Meet the Press. And those guys were so good. And I just tell this anecdote before we take a break. When I went back in government a couple years ago, I went to a book party. Alan Greenspan's book party was at Jim Lehrer's home. Mm-hmm. And he's departed now. They both departed. But Jim Lehrer's home, and it was so wonderful. I hadn't seen the guy in years. He came up to me, gave me a hug. And he said, we gave you your start. And he was right. He was right. Yeah. I'd go on there with there was a New York Times reporter, Leonard Silk, who was probably was center left, but he was a very smart guy. A couple times I debated John Kenneth Galbraith on that show. And it was, but my point is, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was even-handed and wonderful. Right.
And you could debate. Now it's just everyone screaming
that's
at everybody
right.
else.
That's that. You know what? That's exactly right, Liz. Ken Galbraith used to call me my distinguished friend, and then he'd rip me to pieces.
Right.
But you know, all that's gone. And this NPR story is just so horrible. And this woman, the president, you guys are talking about it. Didn't she come out and tweet that she doesn't like free speech? That it's a real problem?
Well,
I think so.
But it's, I mean, you know, this, I've said this before, but at Harvard, the most horrifying thing is when the Crimson does a review of the faculty, which of course is overwhelmingly registered Democrats, and they are asked, do you want or encourage a diversity of opinion? Do you think there's value in diversity of opinion on campus? They say no.
Oh.
I mean, how can an intellectual of any caliber, an honest intellectual, not embrace debate and difference of opinion? I think it's so weak and so pathetic.
Yeah.
But the reason is they know they will be outgunned. I mean, that is really the reality.
But you put your finger on it. I'm going to take a break. But, Liz, you put your finger on it. It's the boards of trustees who run these places without any question. And they're not changing. They're just not changing, no matter how bad. All right, kids, we'll take a break. We're talking to Liz Peek, Fox News contributor. Steve Moore's radio show, More Money, comes on after this show on many of these same stations. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Larry Kudlow.
Hi, it's Lou Dobbs for Priority Gold, America's precious metals dealer. These are volatile times with high inflation, soaring debt, wars on multiple continents, and rising financial stress. Central banks are buying gold to diversify their reserves, so are many Americans. Call Priority Gold and find out how precious metals can help you diversify your portfolio. They're highly rated and happy to help. Call 1-866-303-6357 or get a free gold guide at PriorityGoldGuide.com. That's PriorityGoldGuide.com.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're talking money and politics with Liz Peek, Fox News contributor, syndicated columnist, and Steve Moore, WABC radio host of More Money, which plays right after the show on a lot of these very same stations. Steve Moore, this one's for you, but you're both going to enjoy it. John McLaughlin, distinguished pollster, so is late. He's in the field on a million things, but I got him to put in a payroll tax cut, middle-class payroll tax cut, and the results are staggering. 76% favor, only 15% oppose. Now, listen to this. Republicans favor 79-13. Democrats favor 76-15. Independents favor 71-17. Blacks 72-18. Mm-hmm. Hispanics 74-16. So all across the board, people would like to see a middle-class payroll tax cut. What do you make of that?
Well, a mutual friend of the three of ours, Arthur Laffer, taught me that when you tax something, you get less of it. Right?
Yeah.
And so when you tax employment and you put both the employer and the employee, you're going to get less of it. So there's no question the payroll tax reduces, A, the incentive to work, and B, the incentive to hire. So you and I talked about this when you were in the White House and we were looking for ways to stimulate the economy. And in fact, Donald Trump, during COVID, wanted to reduce the payroll tax because he got it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I like this idea a lot. Now, I think it would boost employment. It would provide basically people a little extra incentive to work and a little bit of bump in their paycheck. What's wrong with that? The problem with it might be political, and that is that the Democrats will say, oh, he's trying to destroy Social Security by taking money out of the, you know, out of the funding system for Social Security. You'd have to kind of replenish the trust fund with other money, but I think that could be done, and I think it would be a wise thing because, when when you and I met with Donald Trump, he said, I want to do a middle class tax cut. This would be a good one.
Yeah. I might add the question that John McLaughlin asked. I wrote the question, but it basically paid for by budget cuts.
Right.
Paid for.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
No. That was the question.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
And so I put that in. Now, you know, I've talked to some people, Kevin Hassett, Russ Vogt. You know, they believe they could find financing through budget savings on the discretionary domestic side. They believe that. The numbers are being worked out by several groups. But, Liz, I think, you know, it would be a good booster rocket. You sort of incentivize a lot of people who aren't working. We don't know exactly how many there are. It's no fewer than 5 million. It could be as high as 9 or 10 million. And, of course, you'd give everybody a morale booster, it would seem to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's right. And, by the way, the problem writ large in our economy right now is not that taxes are too low. It is spending too high. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very easy to research this. I've done it a million times. We are just out of whack. And so I think I was going to note that your question did include that idea that we were going to pay for it. I think that's extremely important. Mm-hmm. Yes, encourage work, but also discourage, maybe take a look at some of those benefits and things like food stamps and so forth that are keeping people from working. So a kind of a rebalancing of the incentives, I think, is 100% agreeable and popular, Larry. And by the way, Biden is out there. I don't know if you guys are watching his everyday political campaign, but every day just about he talks about how he's going to raise taxes.
Yes.
And, you know, call me crazy. I don't know that that's a really terrific platform to go out with. I get it that it's partly class warfare. Talks about how all the tax cuts went to wealthy people, which by there's been enormous repudiation
of.
But I think most people are smart enough to know that if they're going to raise taxes on some people, that kind of trickles down to almost everyone being hit.
And by the way, the last presidential candidate who ran on raising taxes, you'll recall, Larry, was Walter Mondale. And that was a really close election. Oh, yeah. Reagan won 49 states. So I want them to run on tax increases. But another point about the payroll tax that I think is kind of interesting is, let's say you would do a 2 or 3 percentage point reduction in the payroll tax, which right now I think is about 15%. What Trump could say is, this is going to put the money back in your paycheck that was stolen by Biden inflation.
No.
Because right now, paychecks are down by about 3%. Mm-hmm. So Trump could say, I'm putting it back.
I like that. I got one more on the subject of economics. Former U.S. Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, there's a conference, let's see, this is Semaphore. Anyway, Donald Trump's reelection could have catastrophic consequences for the economy. This is exactly what Summers said in 2016.
Exactly.
And he said,
"We got to dig up all those quotes."
Yeah.
There were probably 50 prestigious economists who said if Trump was elected in 2016, we'd have a great depression.
Summers said exactly the same thing. The corporate tax cut would cause inflation, would destroy the economy. Raising tariffs would cause inflation and destroy the economy, set off an inflationary spiral. He attacked Kevin Hassett personally. None of it came true. But that doesn't mean he can't say it all over again. Yeah. I mean, this is Larry Summers. It's a little blurb from Semaphore.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Steve Forbes.
That's going to be item number one on our hotline on Monday. Reprising all those quotes from all those, quote, famous economists like Larry Summers saying it would be a Great Depression. Of course, we had one of the biggest booms ever when Trump was elected.
But by the way, Larry Summers, to give him credit, was one of the first people to say, don't pass the American Rescue Act. $1.9 trillion thrown onto this fast recovering economy is going to blow up inflation. And I got to say, he's been pretty insistent on that still. And he's one of the few voices. I mean, I am stunned that nobody, not Yellen, not Jay Powell, nobody is willing to talk about the fact that our economy has basically been wrecked by all this spending. And that is really the long and short of the last 3.5 years.
Yeah, it's just Summers got that right, but he fell off the beam. And I don't know why, because as I pointed out several years ago, when he was attacking all of us, he always favored a corporate tax cut. I mean, I was on panels with him. He didn't favor 21%, Steve. Okay, he was more 25, I don't know, 28. Yeah. But he thought 35 was too high. It's just sometimes partisanship gets in the way of analysis. Yes. You know what I mean? It's just Austin Goolsbee, whom we all like, sometimes the same thing. Partisanship gets in the way, and I'm sorry to see that, but he's wrong. He's just going to be wrong again. Actually, unleash Kevin Hassett. He's got some open wounds remaining from all that. I got to get out of here. You two are wonderful. Liz Peek, Fox News contributor. Steve Moore's show, More Money, comes after this one on a lot of these very same stations. I'm Kudlow. Great to be with you, folks. We will see you next weekend.